Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
And kia ora, welcome to Eco Living in Action on Otago Access Radio. Ko Maureen Howard ahau. I'm a sustainable practice educator and host of this show. Now, this week on Eco Living in Action, I'm chatting as usual to my guest in the studio about something that they're doing that's inspiring and we can learn a few things about. And this week, it's Giles Pike from Goat Island Dairy to talk to me about milking goats. But before we begin, I would like to say how very, very sad I am about the atrocities to our Muslim neighbours that happened last Friday, and I offer my heartfelt condolences to the families and communities. And this is our time to stand together as one people and to say no to prejudice. Now, this week, you know, before I do come on to my guest, I'd just like to spend a few minutes on Eco Action, giving a little bit of news where I talk about some of my thoughts for this week and give you a few actions or ideas that I hope that you might like to consider. And this week, I experimented with the European horse chestnut as a laundry cleaner. And I recently had read online that the seed of the horse chestnut is also one of those plants that are high in saponin. And that's that substance that's naturally occurring in plants, and it's a soaping agent that can be used for washing clothes. So if you aren't familiar with horse chestnuts, those are those large deciduous European trees with the long leaves, and in late summer, for here in New Zealand, you can find they're quite large, prickly, round, green seed pods that contain chestnuts. And so I'm basically talking about the conkers of our childhood. So now the plant containing the most saponin of any plant is from the tree Sapindus macerosa. And for those of you who might have gone to Taste Nature or Binin, you'll know that they're called soap nuts, or to some of the other health shops around the city. And you can buy them in bulk as well as in bags. I really enjoy using soap nuts, but I'm not the only one, because as more and more people are getting excited about living more sustainably, more of these soap nuts are getting sold. And so I'm not anxious about their environmental impacts, but because it is actually a very slow maturing tree, and freighter ships bring it, and in fact they're actually much lower in carbon emissions than road freight. But I did read a blog that reported that Europeans are inflating the price of soap nuts and making them unaffordable for locals in India to buy. And I haven't been able to find the supporting evidence for this, but so I'm not quite sure. But what I think like about local production is that we can more easily see and find out what is being done and the effects of it. So how did I get on with my locally harvested horse chestnuts? Well, I vaguely followed the recipe for the advice on the blog that was given, and I ground up the conkers with my food processor, and I poured on hot water over the pulp, left it for an hour to draw out the saponin. And what resulted was a kind of a thick, whitish liquid. It wasn't frothy, as I had expected it to be. But anyway, I strained it off carefully so that just the liquid went into the front loader, and turned on the machine, and the clothes came out looking fine, but there was actually still a little bit of odour lurking under the armpits of one of the T-shirts. So I'm not quite sold yet on conker cleaners. But I've got a bag of pulp left, so I'm going to be storing that in the freezer, and I'll try again. And this time, I'll probably soak the pulp overnight and see if I can get more of that saponin released. It did seem pretty hard on my processor, so I'm not sure if I'm going to use this method to get those chestnuts pulped next time. If you are intrigued about this, there's plenty of conkers falling off the trees at the moment. You'll see them about Dunedin. I would love to hear from you if you decide to give it a go and see how they go with washing your clothes. Let me know at ecolivinginaction@gmail.com. So now we'll just move on to the main part of the show, where I'm interviewing my guest, and this week our topic is goats and goat's milk. Goats are a perfect addition to self-sufficient living. They're smaller than cows and easier to feed, and so I've had a few goats in my life, and I've really enjoyed their friendly, intelligent personalities. So I'm sure I would love to have some more if I ever get to the land again. Now, on the show with me today is Giles Pike, and we're live in the studio, and I actually met Giles maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he was at his stall at the farmer's market, and he's one of the co-owners of Goat Island Dairy. That's out at Purikanui. They're selling milk and milk products down at the farmer's market. I'll find out more. And I'm keen to find out why Giles is doing this. I know he's doing it in part for environmental reasons, and I hope he'll be able to give us a few tips on keeping and milking goats, and as well as telling us a bit about Goat Island Dairy. So welcome to the show, Giles.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you on the show. Yeah, it was very serendipitous for me to bump into you. Well, I spied you. And I'd heard about you. I knew that because my flatmate, she actually had your milk, and it was very good. And so I was keen to talk to you. So tell me a little bit about your business and what got you into working with goats.
Well, we have a farm out at Purikanui, and we literally in the sort of the true tradition of how good ideas were formed, we were sat outside my neighbour's woolshed on a beautiful summer's evening thinking, oh, we should probably do something. And I'd retired recently from a career that wasn't particularly local. I was travelling all over the world, and both my neighbours have a farm, and we thought, well, we should just do something. And we were like, oh, well, you know, one of them's a dairy farmer, one of them's a scientist, and then there was me. So we were sort of these three very odd backgrounds.
And your background's in film, isn't
my
it?
My background is in television, film and TV, yeah. So between us, we were like, and then we sort of got into the subject of milk, and I'm a sort of closet fishing fan and trout fisherman, and I've long been at loggerheads with how we treat our rivers in New Zealand, and it's always been a great bugbear of mine. And so we got into the subject of dairy farm and how the rivers, etc. And I said, well, it would be great to do something that involved making that better, because that's my personal thing. And with two young boys, I wanted them to be able to experience the rivers in New Zealand that I have. And, you know, it's such a wonderful feature of this country that is often overlooked in a way, you know. And my friend, the scientist who had the farm next door, said, well, yeah, we can. And so we sort of formulated this idea, and we said, okay, well, we'll just stay very open-minded, and we'll just do lots of research. The scientist especially was very keen on research. And we did lots of, and so we're just going to make the healthiest milk for us and the healthiest milk for the countryside. And we left it at that. We didn't say whether it was going to be what animal was going to make the milk.
Donkey milk?
Yeah, it could have been anything. You know, it could have been, and we just left it carte blanche, open slather to come up with it. And everything we researched pointed towards goats. Mm. And we were like, ooh, that's interesting.
Okay.
And the deeper we went, the more it was goats. Everything pointed towards goats. And we were sort of, okay. And the ex-dairy farmer who's one of our neighbours who'd quit dairy farming because of the intensity of it, and it just wasn't how he started out their family dairy farming, which was much lower intensity in the traditional dairy farming, I guess, of the sort of, you know, the 60s and 70s in New Zealand. He said that they'd bought a goat farm once to turn it into a dairy farm, and he'd actually really enjoyed doing the goats, but the market wasn't right in the 70s and 80s sort of thing. So he had a little experience. He was like, yeah, let's definitely do goats. So that's how it was formed.
But tell me the reasons then.
Well, the reasons is goats are just a far better environmental option. They're an incredibly hardy animal. They're very close to the animal that you would find in the wild all over the world. And the reason why you find them over the world is because they're born survivors, extremely adapted animal, as opposed to a sort of a dairy cow, which falls over at the drop of a hat because they're pretty inbred, and they're not the original animal, if you like. We've sort of engineered them to be a milking platform. So goats, we don't need to drench our goats. We give them a herbal drench, which is more than adequate. And goats are also like horses. They're self-browsers. They will drench themselves. If you put them in meadow hay with hedges around the paddocks, they will self-forage and medicate themselves, much like a horse will, to a certain extent.
So are you growing up different, interesting plants with them?
Yeah, one of the things about our farm was to, the goats would always have access to spring water. We were on spring water on our farm and shelters in their paddock from the winters and from the sun. That was part of what we wanted to do. And so with that comes hedges and trees and areas of bush, because it's very undulating where we live. It wouldn't lend itself to a dairy farm anyway. It's very hilly. So it's perfect. So goats will get out of that what they need, a lot like a wild horse would do, or another animal like that. And the other factor was the milk. The milk is, goats are naturally A2 milk. There's a big push in the cow milk world for A2 milk.
So this is a health thing?
It's a health thing, and basically A2 milk is just better for you. It's scientifically hugely in depth, but it's basically easier for humans to digest. We've been drinking A2 milk a lot longer than we have been drinking cow's milk, because people thousands and thousands of years before cows drank goat and sheep milk, and
all goats are A2.
All goats are naturally A2, whereas cows are, there's only a very, very small population of cows that are naturally A2, and they're sort of genetically pushed that way. So goats naturally give you this super healthy milk. So it's naturally homogenized, low in cholesterol, higher in iron than cow's milk, twice as much protein, give or take, than cow's milk.
So when you say naturally homogenized,
you put it on the shelf.
Yeah, you're not going to get that layer on the top.
It's not that sort of traditional cow's milk where you put it in the fridge and you've got the sort of cream on top. So it's naturally, the fat molecule is all a lot smaller. So it tastes creamier, ironically. And like if you make coffee with it, we sell it a lot of cafes in town because it makes extremely creamy coffee, which people like. That was the other reason. So everything just pointed towards...
I was told it was very good in hot chocolate.
Very good in hot chocolate. My wife's not a coffee drinker, but she's a very big hot chocolate drinker, so she does that, yeah.
And so did you join the farms together to do this? So it's
a
very interesting relationship. Usually one farmer goes it alone. This is quite unique, really, isn't
it? It was something we wanted to do as a team and something for us to do together. And our farm was one of the farms back in the day, the small farms that supplied the original Cadbury's, and was doing very nicely out of that with sort of 30 cows, which back in the day was sort of perfectly fine for a small dairy farm. And there's been three generations of small little farms, right from early settlers through to about the sort of 80s. And then Cadbury's pulled the plug and they went instantly bust, just like a lot of farms around here. And it was never taken up again. So we had, our farm was actually one of the first concrete herring sheds in the lower part of the South Island. And it was hand built by a guy, who had a bad back. So he built himself one of these posh North Island herringbone sheds with the pit that you stand in and you can get your feet under so it doesn't hurt your back. So it was all there, but it had been turned into a wool shed. So we renovated it and made it back to a dairy shed. So it's really cool. Yeah,
right.
It's sort of.
So you've got the shed for the animals to come into to get milk.
Yep, so it was all there. And,
wow.
And we, the best thing about goats, the other great thing about goats, it's exactly the same as milking a cow. It's just less pressure in the pump. So all the equipment is exactly the same.
So, do you have to have different size of nozzles?
No, everything is the same. So we just basically bought lots of cow milking gear off trade, me and people that had gone bust or people that are upgrading, and reused it or re-engineered it and upcycled it and used it. Yeah, and one of the guys has got a very good engineering brain, far superior to my engineering brain, and he managed to piece it all together and we have this beautiful wool shed. Yeah, there's now a dairy shed.
Mm.
So
it's very serendipitous, really, isn't it?
It's
wonderful.
It's a great project.
So tell me, people will be wondering, there's so many lovely, interesting breeds of milking goats out there. Which ones did you choose?
Well, we were going to go and buy them because we had to start somewhere, but then we found that there really wasn't any milking goats in the South Island. I mean, people had a couple here, a few here, a handful there, just doing their own thing, but not enough to give us 20, 30, 40, 50, we needed to start. And we also didn't really want to just throw a load of goats in a truck from the North Island and ship them down here. That wasn't, we didn't really felt that fitted with the ethos of why we started the company. So we're like, okay, and we didn't want to buy them sight unseen. And so we just started breeding our own. We sort of put the feelers out into the community and around Blueskin Bay and in North Otago and everyone. And people said, oh, I've got a couple of milking goats. And we basically started our own herd. So it was a much longer process.
Right. But so how many years has this taken? Right, okay.
But from that, we got our own genetics and we were able to sort of go slower and learn a lot more rather than, boom, here's your 100 milking goats. And
so there, you've got a bit of intermingling of different breeds?
Yeah, we like to call them multi-pedigrees, you know.
You'll be able to call them the Pirikanui.
That's it, yeah, we should think of some fancy show name for them. But they're basically a mix of Saarland and Tongenbergen and the Austrian goats. And they sort of, we sort of select them more on their, just like you would do a dairy cow, more on their milking ability than their, but they're a big sort of, they're a multicultural herd, they're every colour, but they're great, you know, they, and goats have an awful lot of personality, so, and they're very easy to work with, like.
And were you looking at milk taste as well?
Yeah, milk taste was a big thing. I mean, the advantage that we had is the three farms that we use as one farm, if you like, all have a beautiful old-fashioned meadow grass because they've never been intensively farmed or fertilized, or so all the paddocks are, you know, just a huge mixture of grass and herbs and flowers and a few weeds perhaps and hedgerows surrounding them, because all of us are involved in the Halo project because we live beneath the eco-sanctuary, so we're very conscious of keeping pockets of bush and hedgerows and things like that. So that really played into our hands, because that's what goats have naturally want to eat. They don't want the big, you know, foot of superphosphate fertilized dairy grass. That's not what you feed a goat. You know, to get that milk taste, you need all those flowers and herbs. Uh-huh. And so it gives it that beautiful old fashioned, and it's a bit like wine in a way. It's one of those things that you think, oh, well, but you know, once you actually look what's going into wine, it comes through in the milk. So you get quite a bland flavour with the big fertilised grass that's just full of phosphate and that's not what we want, and that's not what we do with our land. The goats don't need that or want that. So we use all the herbs and the flowers and the different grasses, and because we're north facing and we're sort of a little microclimate over there, we're protected from all the southerlies. You know, grass does grow very well, and a lot of grasses that won't grow in some of the colder parts of Targa will grow there. So naturally, you know, we have these meadow paddocks, which is what we wanted them in.
Right. Well, I'll just reassure people, because I had a lovely big bottle of it and it tasted very, very nice and didn't taste goaty. I don't know. There's some idea that goat milk tastes goaty, but whatever goaty is.
I think it's that thing it's quite a new thing for New Zealand. In Europe, you go to the supermarket in a city or wherever, you know, whether it be sort of northern France or Spain or Germany or in England, and goat milk is just part of the chiller cabinet there. It's been there for a long time, and the slightly goaty taste. If you go to someone who's got a house cow, like I grew up with house cows, and I can't drink it now because it's just too fatty and it's too cowy, and it's that same thing. If you have just a house goat, you get that flavour from a house animal, whereas, you know, we're very conscious to keep the bucks away from them and to give them that meadow grass. And our standard reaction is people like, ah, goat milk, and then they taste it and they go, that's really good. And we're like, we told you. And that's our standard reaction. And people like, I like this, I'll buy it. But they need to try it. And when people try it, they love it. So
do you let people have a little taste test?
They have to ask, yeah. Their taste test normally involves buying about a litre of taste test in a bottle. But people are... We always thought that about 80% of our customers would be wanting it for the taste and the health benefits, and about 50%, and the other 20% would be for its environmental, you know, hugely lower impact than cat. And it turns out it's about 50-50. We have lots of people saying, I haven't drunk dairy for a couple of years because I don't want to do the dirty dairy thing, because it's also no effluent and runoff from goats, which is fabulous. And about 50% of our customers are people who've gone away from dairy because of the cow thing, and they're coming back with goat milk and goat. That's perfect for us. We can drink it again.
And so it's actually, for them, it's a really positive thing. You know what I mean? Because they haven't had milk in such a long time.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, there's zero effluent that runs off the paddock in goats. It's fab in that respect.
And do you supplement, they're eating all of this outdoor stuff? And
yeah, we don't need to supplement with anything, no. They just don't require it. They're such an efficient animal. Their milk production is so great for such a small animal. They're sort of 2 or 3 litres, can be up to 4. An animal sort of quarter the size, or maybe a fifth the size of a cow, which would do 8 litres. So, you know, by body mass, that's so much more efficient. So you don't need to drive them hard in that big industrial, throw chemicals at them, throw fertiliser at the grass, push them hard, milk them twice a day. You don't need to do that with goats. You just get a few more goats. If you want more milk, you just get a few more goats.
Right.
So that was the other attraction to us. They're much better animals for New Zealand to have as in their milk market.
And at the moment, they've got quite a lot of room, I guess.
They have a lot of room. Yeah, we've got plenty. We can go to sort of 400 to 600 goats, which would be a big milking herd of goats for us. And then we've actually people coming to us saying, "Can we have your goats grazing on our place? Can we?" People, they just seem to warm to goats. They're like, "Can we? If you run out of land, can you come on our farm?" And because they're very low impact on the land as well, so they don't make people who've got a lifestyle block of maybe 40.
Right, you don't
50,
get that pugging. Cause
if they've got 40, 50 hectares, instead of doing sort of the 50, 60 cattle beast for fattening, can we have your goats? So we've actually got lots of options for grazing, which is great, yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So you do plan to, like, how many years have you been going? And
We've sort of been an official dairy, which is, just to sell a couple of bottles of milk a week, you still have to be the same official dairy as a dairy selling 10,000 litres of Fonterra or more than that a week. You know, it's the same thing. Gone are the days of, we'll just sell a bit from the farm gate, or we don't sell any milk from our farm because it's legally, it just doesn't work these days.
You've got the farmer's market.
We have the farmer's market. We have quite a lot of online sales. We can send it chilled freight anywhere in the South Island. Next day delivery chilled freight with, we use a company called Woolcool, which is recycled wool as insulation. So we chill the box and the wool and the milk down, and then that will last for 24 hours to get it to your door. That's a really cool product.
You've thought of a lot of things, haven't you?
Yeah. what we find is people who can't get it in their local supermarket yet, because we don't get into the supermarkets till after Easter.
So you are going into the supermarket?
Several of the local supermarkets are very keen, and have actually sort of those old days of the supermarket, being this giant beast that wants to beat everybody down, they're sort of gone. The local supermarkets have been very supportive. We were actually approached by one of the supermarkets, because they're independently owned these days, they're like, "Hey, have you got goat's milk? Can you sell us some?"
So people have been asking them.
Yeah, and so it was. So that was really good for us, because we were a little tentative about doing that. Is that what we want to be involved with? But we are going to do that. But yeah, people, we're selling boxes of 6 1-liter bottles, and people buy it online and share it with their neighbour. We as a family, we've got two young boys that are, they're 4. They're 3 and 7, and between us, we go through more than 6 litres of milk a week. So, most people, the box is sort of a family's week's worth. So they buy it online and we send it out to them. Or we get in Taste Nature, Black's Road Grocer, we sell it, Farmers Market, and lots of cafes have it for their coffee around town as well.
Yes. So, I know one, the Good Earth Cafe.
The Good Earth Cafe, yeah, we love the Good Earth Cafe, yeah.
I had them on the show recently,
Fab. Yeah, they're good coffee there as well. Like, I recommend coffees there.
Yeah,
but,
right. It's fantastic, and so it's interesting that a better efficiency, I presume, of because they're eating a wider variety of different foods to get you into the
Yeah, and they don't just need that fertilised grass, which in itself comes with a big effluent problem and a big phosphate problem in the rivers and nitrates. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, look, all the best. Very quickly, where should people find you?
You can find us at Taste Nature, Black's Road Grocer, Farmers Market, and local Dunedin supermarkets starting from Easter.
And it's Goat Island Dairy.
It's goatislanddairy.nz, and you can contact us and read more about us online, and we're on Facebook.
Great. All the best, Giles. Fantastic effort. Wonderful initiative. All right. And thank you for listening. This is Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard. And today I've been talking to Giles Pike from Goat Island Dairy. We're supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. Thank you for listening.
Sustainable Dunedin City aims to facilitate a positive, secure and sustainable future for Dunedin. We're local people interested in issues of climate change, declining energy security and sustainability. As they affect our city, Sustainable Dunedin City produces a regular online newsletter of sustainability related events, hosts regular green drink sessions and organises the Big Green Challenge. For more information or to join, go to sustainabledunedincity.org.nz.
just